Hello, this is Paula with the Vermilion County News on Thursday, March 9th, 2017. We'll start with a story titled Hoopston 911 Center to Reopen, written by Carol Hicks in Hoopston. The city's emergency call dispatch center is coming home. It took two motions to see results Tuesday and a previously unmentioned intergovernmental agreement for 911 emergency services from Vermilion County, but the final motion passed 6-2 to return dispatch capabilities to Hoopston. Alderman Bill Goodwine and Brandon Hamilton cast the dissenting votes. The first motion made by Hamilton was to reinstate Hoopston's dispatch temporarily until the next primary, place the proposal on the ballot and let the residents vote on the issue, which included a 1% sales tax. Alderman Chad Yadden, Alex Holmes, and Alderwoman Lordine Florick questioned the addition of the sales tax since a tax in regard to the dispatch was never mentioned in any previous discussions. Hamilton, in defense, said he heard the people say they would pay more for the dispatch. The vote on this motion was 5 against and one yes and one abstention. At this point, Police Officer Ron Cade brought up the intergovernmental agreement sent to Hamilton by Jerry A. Davis, attorney for Vermilion County 911. The agreement sent on January 6 between Vermilion County 911 and Hoopston stated that it will provide for Hoopston to become a dispatch center and to allow Hoopston to dispatch its own emergency personnel for police and fire calls. Additionally, the agreement further stated that some of the equipment not being used by Hoopston would be returned to Vermilion County 911, but in consideration of the terms and conditions of this agreement and to assist Hoopston to provide the dispatch services provided to for herein, VC 911 shall not pursue payment from Hoopston for any outstanding balance due VC 911 for said equipment. Yadin motioned to accept the agreement, and it passed. Since a deadline of March 31st was set for the return of the agreement, Mayor Bill Krusenberry said he would call Davis and tell him the agreement passed. Once signatures from the mayor, police, and fire departments were on the forms, the agreement would be sent to Davis this week. In other council business, council members discussed the ordinance, amending the ordinance for license classifications and fees designated for liquor licensing. Two additional classes were added, a Class TH license for theaters and a Class WT license for wine tasting. In addition to the new two new classes of liquor licenses, an appeals process was added to the ordinance to prevent or give the council permission for a license to be granted. The ordinance passed 7-0 with one abstention. Council members unanimously approved the franchise change from the New Wave to Cable One Communications. Michael A. Lopez, Jr., Operations Director for Cable One of Phoenix, Arizona, attending with Belinda Dunavan, Regional VP, General Manager at New Wave, gave a brief presentation and answered the council's questions about the franchise. The transfer would go into effect tentatively by mid-May, said Lopez. Also approved unanimously was $50,000 from the TIF fund for the Hoopston School District to build an all-weather track field for the high school. Adrian Helms, Ashley Morgan, and Maya Weber presented their finished projects. Citizen on the dispatch dispute to the council. Their project won best of show of all the senior projects, they said. The Hoopston City Council will meet at 7 p.m. on March 21st at City Hall at 301 West Main Street. Next story is titled Man Robs Burger King on North Side in Danville. Police are investigating a Tuesday night robbery at a fast food restaurant on the city's north side. Danville Police Criminal Investigations Commander Joshua Webb said in a press release officers responded at 11:48 p.m. Wednesday on a report of a robbery at Burger King at 18 East West Newell's Road. As officers arrived on the scene, a subject fled the business and entered the wooded area north of the business, Webb said. Officers searched the area for several hours but were unable to locate the suspect. Restaurant employees told police a man entered the business with his face covered and demanded money, Webb continued. The suspect then took an undisclosed amount of money and fled the scene as police arrived. Webb said the suspect was described as a black man, about 5 feet 8 inches tall, with a thin build, and was last seen wearing a dark-colored hoodie and blue jeans. No weapons were displayed during the robbery, he added. The Danville Police Department has been following up on several leads, and the investigation into this incident continues, Webb said. In a follow-up press release, Sergeant Josh Campbell said, "Police are seeking the public's assistance regarding an individual who may be connected to the robbery." He said the suspect may have knocked on a door of a residence between 11:50 p.m. Tuesday and 2 a.m. Wednesday asking for warm clothing. The individual left the residence after being given a coat and is believed to have walked toward the area of the Vermilion Gardens housing complex, Campbell said. No further information was available Wednesday. Anyone with information regarding this crime is asked to call Danville Police at 217-431-2250 or Vermilion County Crime Stoppers at 217-446-TIPS. Crime Stoppers pays rewards up to $1,000 for information on felony crimes or fugitives in the Vermilion County area. Next story, written by Carol Rome, is titled DACC Seeks Talent for Tournament in Danville. Community members who have a talent to showcase are being sought to entertain at a few halftimes during the National Junior College Athletic Association Men's Division II National Basketball Tournament that starts March 21st at Danville Area Community College. Although the 15-minute halftime productions don't need to be the caliber of Lady Gaga, DACC organizers hope for lively performances by local talent. This year's tournament coincides with spring break at DACC and at schools across Vermilion County, which is creating a shortage of halftime entertainment that has consisted mostly of high school bands in the past. Don Nasser, coordinator of campus and community resources, is one of three DACC staff members in charge of lining up halftime entertainment during the tournament. We invite schools to bring their students to attend the games, and we line up the national anthem singers and bands for halftime, she said. Empty bleachers during the tournament also has the DACC group concerned. Usually in the mornings, we'll have 1,000 area students in the stands, she said. We're reaching out to churches and other programs that might have school-age children that week they can bring to the games. Nasser said she and her group also are thinking outside the box to fill the halftime entertainment void left by the high school bands. We're still looking for halftime entertainment at 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. Wednesday, March 22nd, she said. We want things that are upbeat, anything that is fun and lively. Some examples are tumbling groups and cheer teams, she said. A Latin music act has been scheduled for Friday, March 24th. DACC President Stephen Knackel and Laura Hansgen, coordinator of corporate and community education, both clarinetists, are scheduled to perform during three halftimes at 6:30 p.m. and 8:30 p.m. March 21st and at 3 p.m. on March 22nd. Knackel said he encourages other musical inclined community members to join him and Hengsken during the halftime performances. "I'm not a primetime player," he assured. "I'm perfectly happy playing my clarinet in my basement. If Doc Randall Ashton and his band showed up, I would defer to them," he said. If he can get a musical group put together for the halftime performances, Knackel said he's thinking of dubbing the band Knackel and the Sour Notes. The local musicians would play with the backup band on CD, and a few of the songs Knackel envisions the group would perform include "The Chicken Dance," "This Land Is Your Land," and "Summertime" from Porgy and Bess. "It's fine if anyone wants to join us," he said. "It will be cacophonous. They can bring kazoos if they want. This could be at the level of Spanky and our gang playing 'She's Coming Around the Mountain,'" he joked. Talent search. Anyone with a talent or musical ability who are interested in performing during several halftimes, March 21st and March 22nd, during the National Junior College Athletics Association 2 National Basketball Tournament at Danville Area Community College, are encouraged to call Don Nasser at 443-8755. Okay, the next story, written by Carol Rohm, is called Excellent Lesson. Chicks hatch at Edison as part of Farm Bureau program. And there's a picture of Edison Elementary School kindergarten teacher Amber Tutwiller shows a newly hatched chick to her students from left, Lydia Perez, Brooklyn Harper, Cooper Sims, and Aubrey Wills on Wednesday morning in Danville. A surprise awaited students in Amber Tutwiller's kindergarten classroom when they came to school Wednesday morning. The classroom at Edison Elementary School was alive with peeping sounds as 11 chicks had emerged from 24 eggs. Three of the chicks had hatched overnight. The Vermilion County Farm Bureau's Ag in the Classroom program provides chicken eggs as well as incubators to hatch them and other supplies to areas classrooms to assist the teachers with their science, math, and agriculture lessons. The program, which has been in existence for nearly 20 years, has several incubators it loans out to the classrooms around Vermilion County a couple times a year. A few weeks ago, incubators and eggs were provided to 9 classrooms, 6th grade at Bismarck Henning Junior High, 1st grade at Bismarck Henning Elementary, 3rd grade at Potomac Grade School, kindergarten at Salt Fork North Elementary in Catlin, 1st grade at Judith Gayakama Elementary in Westville, and pre-kindergarten at Danville Lutheran School, pre-kindergarten at Southwest Elementary, kindergarten at Mark Denham Elementary, and kindergarten at Edison Elementary, all in Danville. A second round of incubators and eggs will be distributed to different area classrooms next month, with hatching scheduled around April 26th. Tutwiller has hatched eggs in her kindergarten classroom a few times, but noted that this year the Farm Bureau sent both white and brown eggs. While waiting the 3 weeks for the eggs to hatch, the youngsters work on various educational activities provided by Farm Bureau, such as counting down the days until the eggs hatch and charting the temperature inside the incubator. "We've read stories about chickens and watched videos on eggs hatching," Tutwiller said. "They've learned about this life cycle from an egg to a chicken. They've been very interested in the whole process," she said. Some of the children carefully scooped up and held a few of the 11 chicks that were strong enough to live outside the incubator Wednesday morning. A few youngsters gathered around the incubator, keeping a close eye on the remaining eggs that were on the verge of hatching. Nearby, kindergartner Jacob Weller was hard at work on his assignment that entailed drawing a picture and writing a sentence about the chicks. "I drew the incubator, and this chick is warming up," he explained, pointing to his artwork. Then he started coloring over his chick illustration with a yellow crayon, stating, "I'm going to make it fluffier." Kindergarten Cooper Sims' drawing depicted 7 chicks, some yellow and some brown. Pausing to make some very insightful comments about the baby chicks, kindergartner Bryson Hampton said, "They let you hold them, and they have wings. They're beautiful and very nice," he added. Okay, now we'll run through the obituaries. Cassandra Cassie L. Haugen, 70, of Westville, passed away at 6:25 a.m. on Tuesday, March 7th, 2017, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A celebration of Cassie's life will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, March 11th, at Sunset Urbis Funeral Chapel, 414 South State Street in Westville. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. on Friday, March 10th, at the funeral chapel. As per her wishes, she will be cremated. Christina M. Landers, 58, of Danville, passed away at 9:13 p.m. on Monday, March 6, 2017, at her home. A celebration of life service will be at 2 p.m. EST time, Saturday, March 11th, at Sunset Funeral Home, Covington Chapel, 420 3rd Street, Covington, Indiana. Alex DeVolt will officiate. Cremation rites will be accorded following services, and interment will be at a later date at Mount Hope Cemetery in Covington, Indiana. Visitation will be from 11 to 2 p.m. EST time, Saturday, March 11th, at the funeral home in Covington. Memorials may be made to the American Cancer Society or Carl Hospice. Kaya Chanel Miller passed this life on Thursday, March 2nd, 2017, in her home surrounded by her loved ones. A celebration of life will commence at 11 a.m. on Friday, March 10th, at St. John Missionary Baptist Church, 211 East 115th Street, Chicago, Illinois, 60628. Visitation will begin at 10 a.m. until the start of the service. Officiating Pastor A. Edwards Davis. An additional Celebration of Life service will commence at 11 a.m. on Saturday, March 11th at New Life Church of Faith, 1419 North Bowman Avenue in Danville. Visitation will begin at 10:30 a.m. until the start of the service. Entombment is Sunset Memorial Park in Danville, Leakes & Sons Funeral Home, 304 East William Street in Danville, is in charge of the arrangements. Cheryl Lynn Childress Mildenberger, 63 of 50, passed away peacefully at home on March 7th, surrounded by her loved ones. A visitation will be on Thursday, March 9th, from 5 to 7 p.m. at Pape Family Funeral Home, 10 East William Street in Danville. Services will be at 10 a.m. on Friday, March 10th, at Pape's with Pastor Rod Godly officiating. Burial will follow in the O'Brien Family Cemetery in Sadorus. Emma L. Green, 76 of Danville, went home to be with her Lord and Savior early morning Saturday, March 4th, 2017. A celebration of Emma's life will be at 11 a.m. Friday, March 10th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street, Danville. Officiating will be Pastor Alan Rudy. A visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. Friday at the funeral home. Burial to follow at Danville National Cemetery. Sybil Marie Blanken Belker Beckler, Sybil Marie Blanken Beckler, age 87, of Kingman, passed away on Saturday, March 4th at Rockville Nursing and Rehabilitation. Funeral services will be held at Sanders Funeral Care, 203 South 1st Street in Kingman on Wednesday, March 8th at 2 p.m., with Pastor Brian Newby officiating. Visitation will be held at the funeral home, was held last night at from 5 to 8 p.m. Memorial donations may be given to the Kingman Methodist Church, P.O. Box 71, Kingman, Indiana, 47952. Mary Darlene Dottie Sellers, 89, of Danville, passed away Saturday, March 4th at 1 p.m. at Colonial Manor Nursing Home in Danville. Private services will be held at Sunset Urbis Funeral Chapel in Westville. She will be laid to rest at Danville National Cemetery. Memorials in her name can be made to Disabled American Veterans Association. Join the family at www.sunsetfuneralhome.com. Nathan Nate Lewis Robinson, 47, of Columbus, Ohio, formerly of Danville, passed this life at 12 a.m. on February 28th at his residence. A celebration of life will commence at 12 noon on Thursday, March 9th at New Life Church of Faith, 1419 North Bowman Avenue in Danville. Visitation will begin at 11 a.m. until the start of the service. Officiating Pastor Ricky Hoskins. Intermit Sandhill Memorial Park. Michelle Eileen Meeker, 49, of Westville, passed away Thursday, March 2nd, 2017. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. on Wednesday, which was yesterday, at Pape Family Funeral Home, 10 East William Street in Danville. Services at 11 a.m. at Pape's. Burial to follow in Oak Hill Cemetery. And Eldon D. Larkin, 89, of Danville, formerly of Potomac, passed away at 2:45 a.m. on Wednesday, March 8th, at his home with his wife by his side. A celebration of life service will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, March 14th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Drew Metzer will officiate. Burial will be in Stearns Cemetery in Fithian. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Monday at the funeral home. Memorials may be made to the Bismarck Ambulance Service or Carl Hospice. Okay, the next story is titled Proposed City Budget Affects Other Positions, written by Jennifer Bailey in Danville. In addition to proposed firefighter layoffs, some other positions are also being affected through proposed city budget changes. Mayor Scott Eisenhower is proposing eliminating the city's human resources administrator position, but allow for part-time work to meet those responsibilities, reducing advertising expenses by $7,000 due to the lack of positions. The city will be hiring and eliminating $50,000 for auxiliary workers used to mow vacant lots because the city is attempting to privatize some of the city's mowing. Eisenhower said the police department is seeing a slight reduction in its budget due to the number of recent retirees and new employees at a lower salary. A new part-time position also is being proposed to move Freedom of Information Act requests from a police commander. City Clerk Lisa Monson handles the FOIA requests that come for the city through City Hall, but a police commander handles police department FOIA requests. Eisenhower said the police department averages 15 requests a day. He'd rather see the police commander's time spent on the street and not on the requests. The city also has seen a $40,000 reduction in legal services expenses with the fire union arbitration process complete. Also, a $25,000 revenue increase is being budgeted in license fees. City officials will be considering some license fee increases. Salary increases are budgeted at 2% for non-union police officers, Danville Mass Transit, and Public Works employees, and a 3% for the clerical union. The proposed general fund budget totals $24.5 million in expenditures, down 5.25% from last year. The general fund surplus would be $1,969. Ward 1 Alderman Ricky Williams Jr. and Brenda Brown question Eisenhower on cutting expenses everywhere the city can, including non-union city staff raises, especially when asking residents to pay more in the public safety pension fee and a new storm water management program fee. "We've done that," Eisenhower said about eliminating non-necessary increases in the budget. Eisenhower said it's demoralizing to the approximately 55 non-union employees if they don't receive a salary raise like the union employees receive. The 2% raises will cost the city about $57,000 for the non-union employees. Williams said many people are getting paid the same or less that they were years ago, and city employees making $100,000 a year can do the same. Residents continue trying to do more with less, Williams added. Eisenhower again countered, saying that some of those city employees are saving the city a lot of money through a grant money the city receives for projects. "I think that is worth something," he said. In other business Tuesday, Brian Carnegie and Carnegie Towing told city officials Tuesday night at the Danville City Council meeting he has more than 75 towed cars that have been on his lot more than 90 days. Carnegie participates in the city's rotation for public nuisance tows, and he said it puts a bigger expense on him with this limited space. "We're in space concerns. We need to move cars quicker," he said. The city council approved penalty increases but removed inoperable and abandoned vehicles for now from being added to the violations under the city's public nuisance ordinance. Public nuisance violations result in the seizure and impoundment of motor vehicles immediately. Oh, I just lost my space. Sorry about that. See, Williams. Penalties. The penalties will increase for when a vehicle is seized or impounded when used in certain violations, such as also involving drugs, illegal dumping, and loud vehicles. The $300 penalty for the first offense is increasing to $500, and the penalty for second and subsequent offenses are increasing from $500 to $750. City officials said the increases are to further discourage the violations. Williams said he's concerned about no notice on the inoperable vehicles, such as if someone forgot to get a new car sticker. He said this could hurt people who already struggle with paying for the sticker the most. Corporation Counsel Dave Wessner said everyone knows it's a violation, and he often hears from the public about why the city doesn't do something sooner to remove these inoperable or abandoned vehicles. Once towed, the owner has 24 hours to request a hearing. If the owner is found not guilty, the car is returned and there are no fines. City officials will further discuss ordinance language for the inoperable and abandoned vehicles. Wessner also said about the towing companies and legal process timeframes. That's the nature of the business. They're not required to be part of the towing rotation. Eisenhower and Wessner said abandoned and inoperable vehicles remain a problem. People also hide the vehicles in alleys and on their properties. Also Tuesday, the city received no bids in its attempts to sell the Public Works Garage building on South Street. City officials were to have a bid opening at Tuesday's Danville City Council meeting. However, there were no bids to open. We'll regroup and decide how to go about the sale of that property, Eisenhower said. As part of the proposed 2017-2018 city budget, Eisenhower presented Tuesday is an increase in the sale of city property by $195,000. The increase is due to the anticipated sale of city-owned lots, the former Schomburg building and the South Street garage at 800 South Street. Minimum bid for the property was to be $60,000. City officials still hope it will be sold. Council members also approved an agreement with Duke Energy for hazardous materials and technical response team services. They appointed Ward 5 Alderman Thomas Stone to the Vermilion County Land Bank Authority Board, Tyson Parks and Norman Englund to the Danville Housing Authority Board, and Angeli Burns to the David S. Palmer Arena Board. They also authorized a three-year, $6,400 monthly contract for dedicated fiber internet connection, fiber Ethernet network services, and telephone services with Comcast. And they also adopted a red flag policy and identified theft prevention program. Try to get in one more story. Union pleased with ruling reviewing mayor's plan, written by Jennifer Bailey in Danville. And there's a picture. Mayor Scott Eisenhower is proposing to cut the number of firefighter personnel from 42 to 26. Fire station number 3 still will be closed, bringing the number of stations to 3. Following Mayor Scott Eisenhower's proposal to cut 16 firefighter positions after an arbitrator sided with Danville Firefighters Local 429 on a new contract, local union officials are reserving comment. In a statement regarding the arbitrator's ruling, Union President Jerry Sparks said Local 429 is certainly pleased and relieved with the independent, impartial arbitrator's ruling in favor of public and firefighter safety. Arbitrator Peter Myers' decision to mandate 13 on-duty personnel per shift validates its and protects the capabilities of Danville's fire service. We furthermore believe all parties will benefit from a four-year contract expiring April 30th, 2018. As for Eisenhower's new proposal, Local 429 reserves comment until we may see the plan in full and are able to study the plan's merits and detriments. At Tuesday's meeting, Eisenhower told Alderman the arbitration ruling meant $1.3 million needed to be cut to the balance of the budget. He's proposing the firefighter personnel from 42 to 26 and closing Station 3. In fire department numbers in 2001, the Danville Fire Department had 63 firefighters and 16 per shift minimum. There were 60 firefighters in 2003 with 15, and in 2009 it was 13 and 51 firefighters. Currently there are 42 and the 13 person minimum. So that's kind of sad. They're going to have to get rid of some of them. I guess that'll be it for today, Thursday, March 9th, 2017. Hope you all have a good week. Hopefully we don't get all that snow they're talking about. Just maybe a little bit will be okay, but I'm kind of liking this 60 degree weather around here. But who knows? We'll see. Time will tell. So hope you all have a good week, and I'll see you next week. Take care.